I have seen it, yeah. Ah, I give in.
Okay, go ahead, fellas.
You ready? You ready for this?
Hey. What'd you do today?
What I do today? Talk. A lot. Just been doing interviews.
Getting tired of
them? Nah, they're all right. Just people.
How do you feel about all the security that surrounds you wherever you have to go?
It only surrounds me wherever... It get this mass kind of security in these kind of high-profile situations. But I don't do this often. So, normally I live quite a kind of normal life. So I don't mind it when it's on these occasions, it's okay, you know, it comes with the job.
Do you need more security in this country than anywhere else?
I don't think so, you know. Don't think so. They just give you a certain amount of security, you know. Ching! And you've got security, you know. I try not to notice it, actually. In fact, where are they? Good question. Are you one? No.
Publishers Weekly has you listed as doing a...
There he is. Hi.
Has you listed as doing a 20-city tour to support your new book. Is that correct?
Well, you shouldn't believe what you read in the press. No, a 3-city tour. Actually, slightly less than 20.
What 3?
17, to be exact.
What 3?
New York, Chicago, and L.A.
Will you be doing a musical tour anytime?
Maybe, you know, I haven't sort of ruled it out. I've been too busy with the film to really prepare anything this year. But I enjoyed playing in the film, you know, because it's like playing live. Most of the music's live in the film. So reawakened the thrill kind of thing. So I might do it. I just haven't ruled it out, but I haven't got any plans.
Did you think of asking George to be in the film at all?
No, because because Ringo's in it, because I'm in it, it kind of implies that maybe George ought to have been in it too. The truth is, he's not a ham, George. He really has not... I don't think he's got any ambitions, really, in front of the camera. He was actually the least keen to be sort of acting in Hard Day's Night and Help. He never really had any leanings towards that direction. And we were actually thinking at one point of putting together some... like the Complete Beatles... We're going to put, before they did it, we're going to put our own version together, like the definitive story of the Beatles. And George was the least keen to even be involved in that. It's just, he's not a ham. He doesn't like that kind of thing. He's more interested in being behind the camera. He's more interested in production. And he happened to be out of the country anyway. So the two facts kind of combined to... I knew he wouldn't want asking.
What did you think of the Complete Beatles?
I haven't seen it.
You never have?
Actually, no. George Harris songs? I don't rule it out, you know, but it's nothing that would actually just sort of come up normally. Maybe.
What prompted you to get back into films after such a long absence?
I think I just like the thing of being in movies, just the whole, the ambience, the lifestyle. Even the getting up early in the morning, you know, it's just different from how I normally do it. It's a complete change, and you're in, it's, so there's that aspect of it I just like, and I like being pampered. I'm just one of those kind of people, some people don't like their hair brushed and don't like to be touched, I'm the opposite. So, you know, makeup, hair, wardrobe, love it. But probably most importantly, actually, to be on a creative team, something I've always really liked, you know, to be creating something. In this case, a sort of illusion, with talented people. You know, you've got the cinematographer who's talented, you've got the lighting man who's into his thing, you've got the wardrobe doing their particular thing, the actors. The whole idea of everyone kind of pulling together to make something is a kind of exciting thing to be involved in.
The movie is not serious, but are you in fact serious about movie making? Is this something you want to do continually, or are you going to see how this one goes?
Yeah, probably going to see how this one goes, but... I don't think it'll affect me that much if it doesn't. I'm interested in the whole game kind of making movies, so I should think I'd still stay interested, you know.
I was kind of surprised at the inclusion of a lot of Beatles songs in the movie.
Yeah.
How did you do that?
There was like two ways of looking at the film. Was either we were going to kind of create a completely sort of new musical with a complete new score, or we were going to think of it a bit like a live show. In which case, if you go and see Jagger, or you want to hear Satisfaction, Honky Tonk, Jumbie Lashley, you don't want to hear the entire evening of new numbers. So we kind of chose to take that direction in the main, so that most of the songs you've actually heard before. Some of them, I haven't actually ever performed on film. I haven't performed them anywhere except the original record, like songs like For No One. The only time I ever did that song was making the record. I never did it ever since, you know. So I just thought, well, you know, that's a good enough reason to kind of maybe sing them again. So that was really why it was thought of in that way.
How possible is it that one of your master tapes could be stolen?
Actually, it nearly happened during the filming. I didn't think it was that plausible. You know, I thought, well, you know, maybe not. Actually, it's very plausible. Anything can get stolen, you know, anytime. But while we were filming it, six guys broke into Abbey Road, which is where the tapes were stored, overpowered the guard, and spent the whole night looking for my master tape off this picture. They couldn't find it because it was badly filed. That's the truth. Nobody could find it, man. Where is this thing? I don't know. You got it? No. That's the truth. So it nearly did happen, so I suppose that's pretty plausible.
Where'd you find that charming drummer in the film?
Ah, just some bum off the street. He's a friend of mine.
Oh. From way back?
From way back.
That building in the movie, that was the record company or whatever. What building is that in?
It's a fake. It's a model. It's a model.
Really?
It's a model shot, yeah.
They had some entrance there that looked kind of elaborate, I thought.
That's a set.
Really?
It's a set and a model, yeah. It's based on kind of some Art Nouveau buildings in London. Like I don't know if you know, there's a building called the Michelin Building in Fulham Road, kind of famous Art Deco job. So we based it on that kind of thing to give it. Because the idea behind all the stuff in the film is to take my average days and push them all into a kind of larger than life thing. So like the office is really larger than life than my real office. I don't go around in a hot rod. I haven't got a computer and a phone in it, you know. That's not how I live, but it was just to have a bit of fun, really, with the whole idea.
I was surprised, being under contract with CBS Records, his master's voice dog, the RCA logo,
yeah,
was prominent in the boardroom.
Yeah. I should think CBS are going to be surprised,
that's
too.
That was my question.
This is art. Yeah. You know, we don't have to listen to CBS. We want to put a dog up on the wall, do we?
But that was your office building at the end. That was your building.
No, it wasn't. Again, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. It was actually the Conservative Club, in truth.
Totally faked out.
Yeah, I know. See, this is films, you see. It's not real in films.
Paul, I had read where perhaps Rupert, your cartoon character Bear, would be on the bill with Broad Street. What happened?
It is on the bill, but you just didn't get to see it. So in the theaters, yeah, it will be. It won't be on these kind of previews. The business people reckoned that people, professional people, would not just want to sit through. They wanted the main event, so they've thrown you the main bone. In actual fact, on general release, it will come out as a short in front of it.
So can you give us a sneak what it's about?
Yeah, Rupert, he's a cartoon character from England who's actually 60 years old. He's a little white bear. I mean, he's about 11, but he's been going for 60 years. He's like kind of a little Disney character and stuff. He's very well known in England. And it's just a kid's cartoon thing where he visits some mountainside and sees all these frogs doing a show. So, and the song they're doing on the show is, guess what, one of mine.
Coincidentally,
yeah, it just happened that way. He picked it. It was nothing to do with me.
What do you consider your finest work?
There's this little chicken coop I just built. It's probably my finest. I don't know. I find it very difficult to kind of actually choose from what I've done. I can give you an answer, but it's not real. I mean, I'll give you an answer like Here, There, and Everywhere, or Yesterday, or maybe Michelle or Eleanor Rigby. I mean, I think those are Long and Winding Road, Hey Jude. You know, I kind of consider a lot of them equally. It's very difficult to just pull one of them out because it says that all the others aren't quite as good. Those I mentioned are kind of amongst the ones I think are my best, probably. I like the current one as well, on that same level.
Was Hey Jude written for Julian Lennon?
Yeah, it wasn't written for him, but I happened to be driving out to see Cynthia Lennon and Julian after they got divorced. And I was just driving out on my own to go visit them. And it was it's an hour's drive, and I often, that's a good place, a car, as you know, to get ideas and stuff. And I just thought, Hey Jude. Actually, it was originally Hey Jules. And it was Don't Make It Bad, Take a Sad Song and Make It Better. You know, this divorce situation you find yourself in, young man. Try and, stick it out and live through it. But then I changed it to Hey Jude because it sounded like a better word. And then I found out that meant Jew. And some guy got really mad at me because he thought it was anti-Semitic.
Are your children musically inclined?
Yes. But I don't really push them at anything. You know, if they want to take, a couple of them take piano lessons. They got a very good sense of rhythm, and they sing in tune. But I wouldn't really push them until they were kind of, well, I wouldn't push them anyway, but when they're older, if they really want to go into music, then I'll encourage them. I wouldn't encourage them yet, because I think they're too young to cope with any fame that might come their way.
When you come into a city like Chicago, do you have any freedom or time to find out what the city's about or what you enjoy about it?
Just a little bit, yeah. I have more than I used to. Because I make more time. I figure, after all that Beatles thing, we always used to say all we ever saw was like a hotel room, a bit like this. And we never really used to sort of get out too much, but I realize it's not too clever to do that all the time. So I was out jogging this morning along the beach.
What's your impression of Chicago, and can you compare it to years past when you've been here? And
Yeah, I find it very surprising, actually, in a good way. Its image worldwide tends to be as a secondary city to New York, the other New York kind of thing. I thought it was like amazing. It was a real space age city, and I love it. I love the big building with the thingies and the thing and the solar stuff and the computer. You know that one. I mean, I find it very surprisingly modern and a pretty classy place.
When you do go out in cities, do you have to take precautions like, security is one thing, but disguising yourself just so you could run in peace?
No, I never do it. This guy on MTV the other day doing an interview, and he was saying, well, you and I, Paul, we just can't walk down the street. I was saying, well, I don't know about you, but I can. And it's true, I mean, I always do that. It's something I've always demanded. I don't like the quality of life the other way. It's not like living. It's like just existing in a kind of, some kind of shell. So I get up and down the streets and stuff, and like I say, I was out the last couple of mornings along the beach here and wandering around. And it's pretty good, people over here, there's a really good feeling, I think, for me in America. Because, I get people that just kind of say, yeah, Paul, all right, love the video, man, I'll hear you. And I just do it back to them, and that's it. And I may have to do an autograph occasionally, but it's all right. It's over in 2 seconds. See, I was a fan once myself. I used to wait at stage doors. The Crew Cuts. You ever remember them? Remember the Crew Cuts? Shaboom, yeah. They had a few hits. Like, they had Earth Angel was theirs in England, whereas here it was a black group. It was the Penguins or somebody. I'm not sure. Linda's the expert and all that.
Have you ever thought of what some of your songs would have sounded like if you'd had the 80s technology in the 60s? Musically?
Yeah. More bass drum, probably.
But nothing.
I'm not sure there'd be any major differences, because it'd just be the sound, I think. It'd be like stereo plus.
Given the way you are so well known everywhere and the amount of money that you're said to be worth, why is it that you haven't become more involved in some social and political causes, at least more visibly involved?
Well, that's the key word, is visibly. As far as social and kind of charity, I don't believe in shouting, hey, look at me. I just give money to him. It really embarrasses the heck out of me that, Guess how much I just gave him. I don't think I couldn't do that. I blush. But, you know, I do get involved. Politically, I'm not a political animal, really. If our paratroopers shoot people in Ireland, I'll write a song called Give Ireland Back to the Irish, which will get banned in England, but number one in Ireland. And Spain, funnily enough. Yeah, I can't work that one out either. But, you know, I do my bit. But it's not very visible, just because I'm not that kind of person.
For instance, gun control comes to mind. After John Lennon was shot, a lot of people lent their name and their image, you know, as well as money, to the cause of gun control. Mm. And is that something that you've thought about doing? Is there a reason why you don't?
Well, I did it, actually. The Harry Nilsson thing? Mm-hmm. I was involved in that.
Yeah. But since then?
Since then? What? I should have kept it up. No, I mean, you know, I'm my kind of person. You know, if I'm not, I don't want to run for president, that's my affair. I'm not really into that kind of stuff. You know, I've got my opinions, but I don't want to be a preacher. I don't want to tell people how to live and what to do with their lives. You know, it's nothing I'm really interested in. I always have a kind of sneaky feeling that if ever I did get interested in it, then I'd do it. But I'll tell you what, the other thing is it takes a hell of a lot of time. You've got to be really, it's a vocation, that kind of stuff. You're going to actually be a politician. You've got to run the risk of, like, never seeing your kids again just because the schedules you're on, you know? And too many politicians for me have got kids on heroin and stuff. And I figure it's because they never can give the kids what they give the voters. And that frightens me, that kind of stuff. It's just not me to do it like that.
When you do promotional tours like this, do you bring the family with you?
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
Paul,
thanks.
The projects that you've been involved with Michael Jackson's been involved with you have been, you know, very well received and very tastefully done. Do you anticipate in the future, now Michael seems to be going in the direction of films, do you anticipate anything in the future that you might be collaborating with Michael or he with you on anything?
Well, it would be nice. You know, it's, I think we work well together, and because we enjoy working together, that's basically what it is. It shows. Mm-hmm. We just like each other. It's just one of those things, you know. And we know each other. I know his family, and he knows our kids and stuff. If it comes up, I certainly wouldn't refuse it.
How far back did that relationship start with you and Michael?
With Michael, a couple of Christmases ago. He rang me Christmas Day, and I didn't believe it was him. I thought it was a girl fan, because his voice is high.
What albums or artists do you, if any, can sit down, put the record on the stereo and like it, or put the headphones on?
Right now?
Well, a couple hours. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
At home.
I like Michael. I like Michael's music a lot. I like Thompson Twins. I like The Police. I like a lot of reggae. I like Stevie Wonder. I like Howard Jones. Bunch of people. Mainly it tends to be the ones who can play very well. Tends to be the good musicians that I like, rather than the kind of flash in the pan, terrific. I like Prince. Prince's stuff. I haven't really heard that much of it.
Have you seen
Prince's movie? No. Have you seen his, heard Julian Lennon's album? And if so,
I've heard one track from it. So.
Oh, do you like it? Or?
Yeah, I think it's great. I think at first I heard the word was that it sounded very like his dad. And I tended to think, well, this might be a little bit of a cop-out, you know. Son sings like famous father. But when I heard it, I was very surprised with the qualities of his voice. I think he's really got a good voice there. It sounded amazing. His voice was going all sorts of places that I didn't expect it to go. So, the kid's good.
In your film, there's a scene where you're singing Yesterday in the Skiffle style.
Yeah.
And it looks like candid camera. It looks like those people are doing double takes and going, that's Paul McCartney. Was that rehearsed or did?
No, that was candid camera. That was done like that. They just they sort of put that disguise on me. Not a very heavy disguise, but just tried to make me look, you know, ripped my jeans a bit to make me look like a street musician. And then they dropped me at Leicester Square Station. I just drove there in a car, and they mic'd me up just quietly in a little back alley. And a couple of guys from this Chinese takeaway thought it was a bust. Because, you know, you see this kind of scruffy-looking guy with a little radio mic in his back pocket. He's like, freaking out. But so then I just kind of went on the street corner, just kept my head down for 5 minutes, you know, and I just thought, oh, they're going to recognize me. But they didn't. You know, and so it was great. I just, one kid did. There was like this American punk who was, you know, having fun in London. And he came up to me and said, "Oh, you're Paul McCartney?" I said, "Are you kidding?" Jing, 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 jing. Kept going in. But it was great, actually. I was out there for about an hour and I really enjoyed it because it's like the ultimate live experience, you know, on the street. I made about £5. No, it's true. And the other story I got to tell you is that I saw it coming. I knew that, I know, knowing these roguish journalists, I thought someone is going to say, "And don't you know he's so mean he kept that £5, right?" So I said, speaking of social conscience here, I said to the assistant director, "Okay, whatever happens, no way do I touch this any money I earn. I'm not touching it." I said, "I know they're going to be right on my back." So I said, "It's got to go right down to the Siemens mission, okay?" And he said, "Yeah, okay." So and sure enough, after I'd done it all, we wrapped up, it went down the Siemens mission. Very next day, there's a lady on the radio, and she says, "And wouldn't you know it, he's so mean he kept it." So, you know, that's just, you rogues, you lovable people.
What effect did Little Richard have on your development in Beatles?
Quite a lot. It was one of my first idols. I used to... Really, my high-pitched wailing that I do and did on records then was really based on him. It came out of last day of school, the end of term, we always used to take a guitar into class and kind of stand on the desks and entertain each other. And I used to do Little Richard. Used to be my impression.
Ringo said that when he was on stage with the Beatles, he often wanted to be out in the audience to experience the Beatles. Did you know what we were all going crazy about? I mean, did you want to see what we were all going crazy about? Because being in the eye of the hurricane, you really can't see the hurricane.
No, you couldn't see it. It's always one of those ambitions. It's a fantasy ambition that you know you can never do because you're the fella singing here.
Right.
But it would be nice to have a clone or something to be able to put up there and have him do. Maybe when holograms come in or something. Because that is the thing, you know, you're giving this great pleasure and they're going crazy with it, but you're not watching it. You're the only one missing out, really.
Still wearing our hair because of you like this. You realize?
Is that why you got long hair?
Yeah.
Looks amazing. Good. Ah, it's true, I suppose, you know, in America that it happened that way. Yeah, long hair was considered a bit effeminate before then, I think.
We all had crew cuts before 20 years ago.
Yeah, but I mean, it was really only the like disease in World War II that actually got everyone to really have short haircuts, yeah. Apparently. Like before that, you know, ye olde medieval days, all the squires and the knights, it's all as long as you like. But it's like it was a health reason, from what I understand. Get it off.
Paul, how do you feel about the film after the fact now that you've seen it, you've seen the finished product, are you happy with it? Does it measure up for you?
Yeah, you know, it was a big deal for me writing a thing. And I'm kind of nervous about the fact that most of the people who are going to have an opinion on it, or rather a critical opinion in the media, are writers. And that's a bit intimidating to know that they've been writing a heck of a lot longer than I have, prose. And that probably every one of them figures they could do it better. And maybe they could. So that that nervousness is kind of still with me, really. You know, there's got to be someone out there say, "Well, I could have definitely done it a lot better." But for what it was and for what the film is, which ain't Shakespeare and it ain't, you know, sort of space blockbuster and that, for what we wanted to make, which was sort of a light-hearted, kind of gentle English picture, I think we achieved that. And so I'm proud of it to that extent.
What was the most difficult thing for you in making the movie?
Getting up. Getting up at 5.
I sensed a little note, and maybe it was just my false interpretation of it, of a little bit of melancholy in the film. And I don't mean terribly negative melancholy, but just a little softer, less flamboyant tone in you, particularly.
Yeah, well, it could be. You might be right.
That way at all during the production?
No, not really. But you know, you may see stuff I don't see. You know.
Being such an important thing to you, this movie. Why did you choose a director that had never directed a full-length motion picture before?
Yeah, well, I asked myself that about halfway through the production. But the truth is, no, I don't mean that in a bad way. He goes, "Whoa, hey." No, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, you would. I'll tell you why I did it, was that I was backstage at Chorus Line, London opening of Chorus Line, with Dick Lester, who did the Beatles pictures, and Michael Bennett, who was scheduled to do Chorus Line. And Dick said to him, really have a ball and put everything into this film when you do it, because your first is your best. And it was his theory that, like, everyone goes downhill after their first picture. They put everything, you know, everyone, they're dreaming all their life to be in movies, to be a director. So that first one is like the one they try and put everything in. Also, the success of things like Chariots of Fire with first-time directors out of England encouraged me. And also, I know David Putnam, and he felt that this particular director was a good guy. But as I say, in the middle of it, I did think, you know, am I kidding? Kind of choosing like a first-time director who's never done it. I haven't done it for a long time. We all haven't done it for a while, and this could be a disaster, which it could, you know. But I think myself that it worked the other way, that he brought a lot to it because he was first time, in the same way as you got that kind of thing in Chariots of Fire, you know. That was the theory anyway, you know. I'm glad I did it that way. You know, I wouldn't, if I had the chance to do it again, I wouldn't change the whole thing. It was the kind of project it was.
A lot of the old Beatles songs, I understand that you had sold the rights to some time ago and had to reattain those to singing, yeah. I believe, yesterday. How much did you have to pay to perform that?
Well, in actual fact, I kind of pointed out to him that it was a bit zany for me to actually have to ask if I could sing Yesterday in a film, after all the money I'd made them on it. So they charged a token fee. It was like £1 or something I had to pay him. Please, sir, please may I sing my own song?
Are you still trying to buy those songs back?
Well, you know, if the man who owns them is willing to sell them, I'm interested to buy them, but I'm not holding my breath.
Have you, Yoko, George and Ringo succeeded in dissolving the Apple business?
Not quite. It's looking hopeful, but I think I said that about 10 years ago. No, it's. I think it'd probably be done by the end of this year. It's about time.
When was the last time you went around on a promotion tour?
Good question. Don't know. Long time ago. Haven't done this for a long time. That's why I did it though, because I haven't done it for a long time.
Where have you been before this, and where will you go after this?
New York. I was just in New York for. It's a 2-week trip. I've been to New York first, and then here, and then L.A. tonight, and then just New York and home.
Since you seem to feel so bad about having lost the royalties to some of those songs, why do you have the royalties to so many of other people's songs?
Who said I feel bad about losing the royalties? No, I lose my babies, not my royalties. I wrote those little things, you know, and we decided, it was decided by business managers to sell it all. It was a bad mistake. It was like Picasso, it's not quite modest, but I mean, it's like Picasso selling all his pictures and not having any left. So it's not the money aspect, it's just the fact that they're mine kind of thing, and emotionally, they sort of belong to me. If you tell anyone on the street that I don't own Yesterday, I don't think they kind of see that as a logical thing, and that's what it is. It's not that I think publishing is a bad business. Why I'm in publishing as a business is that it's music. And when you make money, you have to invest money. I used to think coming down from Liverpool, you could just stow it in a bank and just leave it. I used to always say to our advisors, well, I don't want to do anything with it. You know, we just leave it in the bank, can't we? I said, no, you know, they really hate you for the taxes and everything. Apparently, it just doesn't sit there and behave itself. So they say, yeah, you've got to invest it. So it was put to me that I was either going to invest in computers, brush factories, you know, clothesline or whatever. And I said, well, couldn't it be music? And it just happens to have worked out very well. That the music publishing company I bought happens to just have been very successful.
Do you still have the rights to On Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you make them pay you every time they play it?
Well, I mean, that's the rules of publishing, you know. I mean, it's not just wicked old me comes up, you'll pay. I mean, you know, well, you just, that's life, you know, it's the way it goes.
But if you got, you know, a token payment for playing Yesterday, you give that same token payment to University of Wisconsin?
Are you their agent?
Do you give them
speak to me later, darling. I'll give you, I don't know, you know. It's, I'm not actually involved on the kind of day-to-day running of the business, you know. It's, I really am kind of creative artist and stuff, but as I say, if you make money, you've got to invest it in something. So they tell me anyway. Anyone's got a better plan, I'm willing to listen to it. But It just so happened that the publishing company I bought happened to own the rights of that. So what should I do? To say to everyone, here, give them all back. It just doesn't kind of, it's not the way you do it.
Does Paul McCartney have creative control, or do you have somebody going, there are too many notes in this?
No, I've got complete creative control, yeah. That's what I do have. I decide kind of that it's a good idea to buy something like a publishing company like that, but I don't actually do the day-to-day running.
As far as your music, though, I mean, when you're doing records, you don't have anybody going, you have to do it this way because...
No.
A lot of people have that problem, I would imagine.
Nowadays, particularly, yeah, the record company is kind of a bit fussy. You know, they'll turn down records and say it's not good enough and stuff, which you can't blame them because they lost a lot of money in the past from being too liberal with their artists. But in my case, I haven't reached that level yet.
Well, the musicians you were out with on the Wings tour was such a great tour and had such an impact on us here. All the musicians that were with you, do you still keep contact with them? Do you play with them periodically? Do you rehearse? Do you jam with them?
Not really, no.
Denny Lane?
No, he's living in Spain. Joe English has got a gospel group. He's American.
Now that John Lennon's
dead. One of them's dead.
Now that John Lennon's dead, have you ever thought about him and regretted that you never got together with him again after you split? Or
mm-hmm.
What are your feelings on
that? Sure. Well, it's the same as when anyone dies, you know, that you wish you'd told him all the stuff you wanted to really tell him, you know, but you don't. It's just the way people are in relationships. You know, people are, they don't just open up. People don't just open up. You don't just meet a person and tell them everything. You know, it's to just chip away at the barriers and stuff. I would have liked to have kind of just told him that I thought he was okay and that, you know, and just straighten things out. But the one consolation thing was that the last phone call that we had together was a really good, warm phone call. We didn't talk about business at all. That was always the problem, see. Once we got talking about business, we began to sort of suspect each other's motives for anything. So we learned eventually to not talk about business. It just became a taboo subject. So the last phone call I had with John was just very warm. He talked all about his kids and about his cats and about this and that. But it was a very nice phone conversation. So, I take that as some kind of consolation.
Paul, your movie and Prince's movie are, I guess, the latest in a long line of projects that are more linking the music and various mediums now. They're TV tie-ins, they're movies, mm-hmm. and then they're... What is that doing to the creative process? Are you now having to think in different directions, and is it something that could eventually take the impact away from just the radio that we all grew up with?
Well, you know, things change all the time. It's not me changing them. I mean, you know, you can't pretend we're in radio land still. We're not. You know, there's videos out there. It's a pretty important thing these days. I always liked the two. You know, I've always liked the visual aspect of stuff. I've always been involved in promotion films, or called video, as they were called then. I think it's good. I think it's a good thing. It's no different from any other changes that happened. You know, when crystal sets went out, you know, or the wind-up gramophones went out. It's no different, really. It's just progress, seems to me.
The rock and roll movies, on the whole, don't do well. But Prince's movie is doing well, and the accessibility of videos to kids these days—they're growing up with videos as we grew up with radio.
Yeah.
Do you think that can help rock and roll movies now? Is it a boom because of the video age?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think. Let's look at it the other way. If the video thing hadn't happened, records were looking at a big slump just a couple of years ago, weren't they? Now, if that had continued, you might have just seen it all go. I'd rather see something else come in, even though certain people think, you know, it's not the integrity may not be just there, and the, you know, you hear all the complaints and stuff. I think it's good for it. I think anything like that provokes a lot of interest from people. And I mean, these are not people. People don't have to switch on MTV. They, you know, they literally just love it. So if they love it, who am I to argue? I think it's good for everything generally.
Will you write with video in mind now, or just stick?
Not really. No, I think I may start to. You know, people may start to. it may be a thing that starts to happen. I've almost done it, because you know what you're doing. You know, you're aware what you're going to get into. If you get a single, you know there's going to be a video these days. So it's kind of dumb to not think about the video, really. But I think there's a trap there that you can start just writing films instead of songs. So I particularly at the moment don't do that. I just get on with the song pretty much in the same methods I've always used. And then I think second about the video. But I can see it coming, you know, where you just do the two things side by side.
Is that how No More Lonely Nights came about? The song came first, then the movie?
No, it was written for the scene in the movie where I'm wandering around the station. We needed a song for that. And I wrote this song and liked it and thought it would make a good theme song for the picture, so it became the theme song.
Excuse me, can we have three more questions?
Is there a trap in having so few video outlets? There are only, for example, in this country, there are only a few network programs. There are a couple of cable entities that run video, and of course, then there's MTV. Mm-hmm. Is there a trap in having that limited access so that it's basically a few people deciding what records are going to be hits or what videos are going to help launch artists and various records?
I don't know, really. I'm not an expert. I just think, for me, just looking at it as a person, I just think that people demand things, you know. People want videos. It's a new thing. People like them, and that's why they're there. People didn't like them, they'd disappear overnight.
Along that same lines, when you were first starting out, even before you were big in England, mm-hmm. could you have afforded the video equipment? Could you have ever made it back then, knowing how big and important videos are?
Yeah, we would have just made cheap videos if we couldn't afford the expensive ones.
After 5 days in jail in Japan, did you think...
Nine.
But I mean, after 5 days, did you think, wait a minute, this is a lot more serious than I thought it could be? Or was
after 1 minute, I thought that.
But I mean, when
I was looking at 7 years hard labor. Understand that?
Was that your most frightening moment in your mm-hmm. life, do you think? Or was?
One of them. I've had a couple. That was frightening, yeah. I mean, it was more, I just was annoyed at myself for being so dumb, really, more than anything, and involving the kids and my family in it. Because, you know, I'm quite an upstanding father normally in all other aspects. Just happens it's kind of unfortunate on this issue that I disagree with the law. I'm not sure if I disagree with it. I'm not sure what the majority view is on all of this. My view is that if someone came up to me and sort of asked me what drugs they should get involved in, I'd tell them none. But our society is very involved in drugs, and I happen to think that particular one is one of the less harmful ones. I'm not saying it's not completely harmful. Like I say, you know, if you want what's harmless, then you don't do anything. But I believe there is... There's a slight mistake in the fact that you would be encouraged to take, well, not encouraged maybe, but you'd be perfectly okay to take three scotches, to three martinis, to drink a few crates of beer, six packs and stuff. I believe it's more debilitating, that stuff. Sleeping tablets, particularly if you're going to get involved, all of which is very legal. So whilst I really don't want to come out as any kind of preacher for pot, I do think there's a kind of I'm not sure if they're right when they kind of say that it really ought to be 7 years hard labor. I mean, I have a feeling that is a little heavy, just a little.
Yeah. Well, finally,
one question,
yeah.
Finally, besides go see it, what would you like to say to potential viewers of the film?
Don't go in there expecting some kind of huge sort of sci-fi blockbuster or some kind of incredible stuff, something with incredible deep meaning. Just go for a pleasant evening out, and I just hope you come out of it with a warm glow. You know, this ain't Chekhov, but I think it's a good evening out. So I hope you enjoy yourselves.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Jim Scully with CBS Records. 20 years ago.
Really?
I worked with you on Hard Day's Night when you had the soundtrack. Anywhere around there is great.
Hello, New York. This is Marge Halperin in Chicago with four raps on Paul McCartney.
The first one, a suggested lead, Paul McCartney has strung together a series of his silly little love songs for a movie. He's in Chicago promoting it. In 3, 2, 1. McCartney says, "Give my regards to Broad Street, ain't Shakespeare, just good entertainment." He says he wasn't trying to make a major social or political statement.
I'm not really into that kind of stuff. You know, I've got my opinions, but I don't want to be a preacher. I don't want to tell people how to live and what to do with their lives. You know, it's nothing I'm really interested in.
He is interested in spending as much time as possible with his wife and 4 kids. And when it's time to listen to rock and roll, McCartney's faves include Michael Jackson, the Thompson Twins, and John Lennon's son Julian, who just put out his first album. The kid's good, McCartney says. Marge Halperin, NBC News, Chicago. Second story, a suggested lead. Paul McCartney says a bad business decision from his past came back to haunt him when he made his new movie called Give My Regards to Broad Street. Story in 3, 2, 1. McCartney long ago sold the royalties to many old Beatle tunes. He had to pay to play Yesterday in his own movie. Now he's trying to buy back his old songs.
I lose my babies, not my royalties. I wrote those little things, you know, and we decided, it was decided by business managers to sell it all. It was a bad mistake. It was like Picasso, it's not quite modest, but I mean, it's like Picasso selling all his pictures and not having any.
McCartney owns plenty of other music, though, including Buddy Holly's entire collection and On Wisconsin, which means the University of Wisconsin pays him every time they hold a pep rally. That's just a business deal, McCartney says.
Are you their agent? Speak to me later, darling.
Marge Halperin, NBC News, Chicago. Third story, a suggested lead. Paul McCartney stars with Ringo Starr in his new movie, Give My Regards to Broad Street, but he regrets the fact that he never got back together with John Lennon. Story in 3, 2, 1. Just as when any friend dies, McCartney says he's left wishing he'd said certain things to Lennon, that he'd straightened things out. But McCartney says he's glad their last conversation was warm and friendly with no shop talk.
Once we got talking about business, began to sort of suspect each other's motives for anything. We were talking all about his kids and about his cats and about this and that. But it was a very nice phone conversation. So, I mean, I take that as some kind of consolation.
McCartney has had a chance to hear the new album from John's son, Julian, and he likes it. The kid's good, he says. Marge Halperin, NBC News, Chicago. Okay, and the final story, suggested lead. Paul McCartney is in the States to promote his new movie, and he says it's good to be back. Story in 3, 2, 1. McCartney says he's used to the tight security that follows him here and everywhere else, and even manages to get out a bit, to jog on the beach and see the sights and his fans.
Yeah, I'll get people that just kind of say, yeah, hey, yo, Paul, all right, you know, love the video, man, I'll hear you. And I just do it back to him, you know, and that's it. And I may have to do an autograph occasionally, but it's all right. It's over in 2 seconds.
In fact, McCartney likes attention. He says one reason he decided to make another movie is that he likes to be pampered. He says he also likes to be part of a creative team, turning out a film he says isn't heavy, just good entertainment. Marge Halperin, NBC News, Chicago.